The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome, 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 welcome to The Big Show. So, I heard your lead story, Aaron.
Yes.
So, I'm a little confused because Seattle's thinking about legalizing magic mushrooms, but the King County prosecutor has already decriminalized every drug in personal possession amounts, including heroin and meth and all of that. So, do you know what changes with this?
I think it would just be probably Seattle specifically telling its own police force that let them go. You know, don't enforce any federal policies surrounding psychedelics because, yes, they are illegal still in the eyes of the federal government. So it's kind of the same process that Seattle took when it was trying to legalize cannabis, right, saying don't enforce rules surrounding marijuana, and then the state legislature passed it, and so here we are now with legal marijuana. Who knows what's going to happen here?
I've never used any illegal drug. I've never smoked weed in my life. It's just something that I always chose to stay away from. I have to say the hallucinogenics, because it seems so impossible to lose that amount of control. But do you know who Larry Hagman is by any chance?
No.
Okay. Larry Hagman was the star of a TV show called Dallas back in the 80s. It was the number one television show in the country by a long shot. And it created these pop culture moments like Who Shot JR, which was a big cliffhanger. And Larry Hagman, he was one of the first TV stars to hold out because the show was nothing without him. And he wanted, I think, $1 million per episode or more than that. And anyway, a few years ago, Larry Hagman was a horrible drug and alcohol abuser. And he was in Seattle to do because we have a liver transplant center here. And he wanted to highlight the benefits of donating organs. So I had him in the studio. And he was also on one of the biggest shows in the 60s, I Dream of Jeannie. And so he was very well known. But there was a time where he was the biggest star in all of television. And he loved LSD. And he would tell me a story when he was drinking on the set of Dallas. He would drink like a fifth of hard liquor over the course of a day. He would drink bottles of champagne, but it was the LSD that he loved. And I was talking, he was in the studio. And he said, so you've never tried LSD? And he was kind of amazed. And I go, no, I've never tried it. And then we went to a commercial, and he started talking more. And he said, okay, here's what I want you to do, Dory. He goes, I want you to try ecstasy, because that's like a precursor, an LSD precursor. And I had one of those moments, Aaron, where, like I said, I was a kid when he was the biggest star in the country. And I thought, wow, J.R. Ewing is trying to turn me on with LSD. And I will also say that, as he was describing it to me, I said, and this was on the air, I said, why do you love it so much? Because he had quit, because he needed a liver transplant. He had just ruined his body. But I said, describe to me why you love LSD as much as you do. And he said, do you believe in God? I said, yes. And he said, imagine if God had a God. He said, that's LSD to me. And I thought, wow. Yeah. It was very powerful.
That's a heck of a drug right there, yeah.
Jeez, no, I still have avoided it my whole life. But, man, he was trying. He was trying to get me to use. So I guess these magic mushrooms would also be kind of a precursor to that. So, because they're hallucinogenics, right?
They are psychedelics, yeah. And so they're being pushed by a group called Decriminalize Nature Seattle. Mm. So they're focused on things, again, like marijuana and mushrooms, which are found in nature. LSD, you know, ecstasy, those, of course, are all
fascinating. Yes. All right. Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, with that as your prelude, I've got a real interesting legal case to tell you about. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Well, things are tough out on the streets these days. More and more people are carrying guns for personal protection. Of course, there are a lot of responsibilities and laws that go with that. A local woman from Yelm may be facing some prison time for something that she says was purely in self-defense. Her name is Ann Gellenbeck, and she joins us here on the Dory Monson Show, along with her attorney, Kelly Sego. Ladies, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Thank you, Dory.
Ann, you told me in the email you sent me, you're a 56-year-old nurse, you have a concealed carry permit, you have never been in trouble with the law, and now you're facing the possibility of prison time. So tell me what happened on this evening last year when you were taking your dogs for a walk.
So on April 20th of 2020, if it was a Monday, I had worked that day, and I my husband was out of town, out of the state for a couple weeks, and I have three dogs that I walk every day, and I walk different places, but I walk every day. And when I left, I have a concealed carry, and so lots of times I walk up in the Bald Hills, and so I take my weapon with me, a weapon that I've had since 1986. I have a permit to carry that weapon, and I've taken classes regarding handgun classes, so I'm quite trained, and I do practice shooting my gun. It's a snub-nose 38 special.
Okay.
With a shroud hammer, so it's a very small gun. The barrel is like 1 7/8 inch long.
Okay.
Very small gun, and I carry it in a belly band when I walk. So when I left the house, I was.
Let me try to condense this a bit from what you were telling me. So you encountered a neighbor that evening, and this is a guy that there has been a long running feud between you and this neighbor. You say he's called the police 78 times in the last couple of years, and this is a property line dispute, is that right?
It's a property line dispute. He has put construction on his property without obtaining the proper permits. He built a garage too close to the property line. He landscaped our property, just did not agree with where the property lines actually are. So as a result of that, he's filed an adverse possession lawsuit to take a section of our property. And he's in violation, many violations with Thurston County ongoing.
And also what's happened with Ms. Gellenbeck and this neighbor on her property line is he's amped it up by making these 911 calls for ridiculous things like that they had noise complaints, that they were putting cameras on his property and looking in his bedroom. These were all things he called emergency services and had police come out the 78 times. They'd come out every single time, but he dealt with a number of officers and really pushed and pushed and pushed to the level that he began some violent behavior and some lewd behavior of exposing himself, of throwing a bucket, of damaging property by putting sprinklers on it. This is where Ms. Gellenbeck was when she ended up running into him trying to go and walk her dogs that day.
Well, as her attorney, Kelly, why isn't this just a cut and dried civil dispute over a property line? Because there's not a lot of subjectivity. If it's been surveyed and if the property has been calibrated correctly, why isn't this just a cut and dry issue?
Well, it should have been. It should have been something that was being handled through the county, and it has been being handled through the county. There have been finally examinations of what he's done. What happened was that this individual did not get the proper permits. He didn't go through things properly. And so when Ms. Gellenbeck started trying to use her right to call the county and say, this person's doing these things, can somebody come check this out? Things mm-hmm. really amped up. That's when the 911 calls increased. And
got it. All right. So that's kind of the background. So, and on the evening in question last year, what happened that led to you drawing your gun on him?
Well, I never drew my gun.
Okay.
I never drew my gun. So I told him I had a gun. So I went to walk my dog. I go to get out of my car. I get out of the driver's, go back to the back door and go to get my dog. I did not have a chance to put my gun in the locked box that I keep underneath my passenger seat. Mm-hmm. When a man started yelling, and I don't want to be foul on the radio, but he extremely foul language, and I looked up, and here was my neighbor,
okay,
who is 320 pounds, 6'3". He starts yelling at me. One of my dogs jumps out of my car. He's a puppy. My other two dogs, I got on a leash. This man came around at me, calling me names. I called him names. He called me names. He came around at me. He started kicking my dog, my beautiful purebred Boykin Spaniel, who is a canine good citizen. He mm-hmm. starts kicking my dog. I told him, get back. I have a gun.
Okay, now he says, he claims that he feared your dog was going to bite him. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if your dog went into a defense mode to protect you if there's a lot of screaming going on. He says he pushed the dog away with his foot. I'm guessing you don't agree with that characterization of this.
Well, my dog was on a leash, and he was kicking my dog.
He wasn't pushing it away with his foot, as
no,
you said.
He kicked the dog. He kicked
okay.
the dog.
Seeing this in the Olympian newspaper, he says that you then removed your gun from your waistband and pointed it at him, first 12 feet apart, then 3 feet apart. Both you and the man called 911. You told me a moment ago you did not ever draw your gun on him. Are you telling me you don't?
I never removed my gun from its holster. And I was okay. holding two dogs. I had two flexi leashes in my right hand, and I was holding my puppy in my left hand.
Okay. Police came as they were interviewing both of you. You said you told them you were armed. You denied removing the gun. You have the concealed carry permit. And he says that you produced a weapon, and he looked down the barrel of a really big gun. What kind of gun is this?
It's a snub-nosed 38 with a 1 7/8 inch barrel. It's the smallest revolver that Smith & Wesson makes with a shrouded hammer.
So given all of this, Kelly, I mean, it's a long-running dispute. Why is Ann looking at the possibility of prison time here?
Well, the short answer is she was convicted of assault too. The assault to described by the prosecutor as she never intended to shoot anybody or do anything, but she pointed the gun to scare him. And the prosecutor decided to charge her with a deadly weapon enhancement. This is something that is not regularly done, certainly not on somebody with no background. This is prosecutorial discretion to be able to file this, and the current law is that is a 3-year mandatory consecutive sentence over any sentence that she would get on assault two charge. Why they went forward with this is shocking to me. I've been practicing criminal law for 25 years. I just don't understand why this honestly wasn't something that that the prosecutor's office tried to delve into further. They took this neighbor's word for it, even though there's clear evidence that he made all these 911 calls. He that nothing came of, so there must not have been anything there. I just don't understand. I come from Chicago. We say, what kind of juice does this guy have that he's able to go forward in this way? But Ann Gellenbeck is somebody who...
I understand that both piece your homes are both waterfront real estate, and everybody assumes that there's some money that goes with that, and with money comes a certain amount of power or juice, as you called it, Kelly. But is it a factor that this happened on school property? Was that part of this issue?
Well, that was a misdemeanor, not even a gross misdemeanor, and we had certainly an issue with the Thurston County. Our investigator went to check that out and was told by someone in the property office, sorry, I don't have the name, exact name of the office, that this area where Ms. Gellenbeck was not actually school property. It was behind the gate that had the signs on it that said, no guns here, no drugs, everything. And Ms. Gellenbeck, whose son had attended that school, knew the school very well, and she knew not to go past that gate. That's why she had a lockbox ready to put her gun away. So she's recently taken more classes, even.
There hasn't been a determination of guilt yet. It's just arraignment coming up. Is that right?
No. We have had a trial. She has been convicted.
Oh.
And we are looking at the sentencing situation now, and it is very disturbing that a VA nurse who's worked through COVID, who's spent her whole life caring for people because of this gun enhancement law, is looking at a mandatory 3-year prison sentence. And she's not, we have a motion for a new trial because all of this information did not come out between Ms. Gellenbeck and her neighbor, and the judge did not allow the jury to hear anything about this. It was referred to as a property dispute.
You guys have to explain to me. Is there something that I should know about that I don't know? Because from what's been described, no shots were fired. There is a he said, she said, literally, about whether the gun was even pulled out. I'm trying to figure out how you were found guilty. I mean, is there something I need to know about this that led to the guilty charge or the guilty decision, I should say?
You know, it is shocking that this was the decision that the jury made. The story that was told by this individual on the stand, he described that he was 150 feet away and that Ms. Gellenbeck was the one yelling things at him. And he just wanted to de-escalate, and he'd had training to de-escalate. So instead of walking away on this huge school property, he walked right back to the very small area where the cars were parked and came right near her. That was his testimony.
And I need to accelerate a little bit here because we're almost out of time. But and the thing that comes to my mind is, you told me that you have a pretty good life. You live on the water down there in Thurston County. You've been a nurse your whole life. No criminal charges against you your entire life, and now you are facing 3 years of sitting in a prison cell. I can imagine few things that would be a bigger nightmare for somebody. I can't even imagine what you're going through with all of this.
It's unbelievable. It's never in my life did I ever think I'd be facing such a situation. It's a true nightmare.
Especially as someone who has tried to follow the rules her whole life, who mm-hmm. did all the things she was supposed to do, who took an extra class because it had been a while since she had a gun safety class, had recently taken something, who told the police when she called 911 about this incident, I have a weapon, I was told in my class to let the police know so that there was no issue.
Sure. I also imagine if you've been feuding with this guy for years and years that he must feel an enormous amount of smug satisfaction if the feud has escalated the way you've described and at the notion of you going to prison.
It seems like he definitely has. And speak to the issues that have come up since this and how you've been out of your home.
I've been out of my home. I haven't been allowed to be back in my home. I've been there since April 20th. He continues to call 911. He has called 911 saying that my husband tried to run his girlfriend over. The police came out to the house. This gentleman has cameras on our property. The police came out and looked at the videos that they were trying to claim my husband was running over the girlfriend. And the police said, well, it looks like the man pulled into his driveway. So he's called 911 again, trying to say that my brother is following his girlfriend and that my brother drove a silver pickup truck and the silver pickup truck was parked in my driveway.
Okay, I got you. So in the 30 seconds we have left here, what is next? You're appealing this conviction, I assume. Is that right?
Well, we're trying to get a new trial. So we filed a motion within 10 days of the conviction to get a new trial for some things that went on during the trial. So tomorrow we have a motion to see about getting a new trial. Sentencing is now the first week of August.
But if you don't get the new trial, it's a mandatory minimum of 3 years in prison. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, look, I'm gonna look into this more because something's not adding up from what you've described and a jury coming back with a guilty verdict. So I need to reconcile that. But I certainly hope that both of you will stay in touch with me and keep me posted as this thing continues down the pathway here.
Absolutely. Thank you, Doreen.
Thank you very much. Ann Gellenbeck and her attorney. Yeah, something's not adding up for me because that doesn't sound like 3 years in prison, but that's what the jury came back with. Your thoughts, text me, 98973. We'll check the news for you, and then we will continue with a big lead here on the Dory Monson Show. Aaron and I were talking about at the beginning of the hour, Seattle City Council wants to legalize or decriminalize, to be precise, psychedelic drugs, man, such as mushrooms. And as I said, I've never tried any drugs. I mean, alcohol is a drug, so I've used that drug, but I said to Aaron that the only one that's ever intrigued me is I had a buddy who, back in high school, he told me a story about I think it was LSD. But I can't imagine losing control of your mind to the extent where you're seeing things that are not. But my buddy was driving down the freeway with another friend of ours in the car, and he had his right elbow on the armrest in between the seats, and his head was kind of leaning on his fist on his right arm as he was driving down the road. And according to him and our mutual friend who was in the car with him, he became absolutely convinced that his hand was bolted to his head, and the friend in the passenger seat had to reach over and kind of pantomime unscrewing a bolt. And he unscrewed it. That's when the driver was able to remove his hand from his head. That was Ballard High School, 1977, kids. Great, great educational place. But and they were close friends of mine. But I heard the story from both of them. So it's hard for me to imagine losing control like that. But, you know, like I said, Larry Hagman said that it's the best. It's just the absolute best. If God had a God, it would be LSD. And I don't ever want to glamorize this stuff because it destroys so many lives. And there are people who, you know, have the flashbacks. And I mean, it can, I know a guy personally used to live in my neighborhood who one bad trip, and it, in many ways, destroyed his life. So it's not something that I'd ever want to mess around with. But anyway, and I know that the micro dosing and the mushrooms are not anything like taking LSD, or so I'm told. But the members of the Seattle City Council, they say that they want to decriminalize psychedelic drugs. And it's just, you know, the question that you have to keep asking, are we on the right track here? In Seattle, when our King County prosecutor has decriminalized every drug, so we have heroin and meth addicts from all around the country coming here. Some of them have murdered, some of them have raped women. Many of them, almost all of them, commit crimes to feed their drug habit. You know, we got Jay Inslee joking about joints for jabs, which has made us once again a national laughingstock. And now the Seattle City Council wants to legalize psychedelic drugs. And the question, are we on the right track here? Here's Andrew Lewis on the Seattle City Council.
And we've also been in close contact with the advocates organizing around the decrim nature movement to reassess public policy in a progressive direction around entheogens, also known as psychedelics, and the city policy related to entheogens, following the lead of a number of jurisdictions around the country who have either made it a low law enforcement priority or even legalized or decriminalized the substances.
Yeah, and I don't think we're on the right track. And I don't think that, you know, a city policy that gives a clear path for children to try experiment. I know kids can get whatever drugs they want. I understand all of that. But basically, a good rule in life, if Shama Sawant is in favor of something, you should probably be against it.
Data has shown just absolutely overwhelmingly that the criminal justice system is a terrible response. We know Reagan's and the neoliberal era failed war on drugs did nothing but expand mass incarceration, decimating especially communities of color and working class communities.
They're still talking about Reagan? Let's give it up. They're going to be talking about Trump 40 years from now. Just give it up, please.
The criminalization of psychedelic drugs is only a small part of that mass incarceration problem, but it is a part. But more specifically, there is now significant research showing that these psychedelic drugs are very harmful, are rarely harmful, and can have very significant benefits. Research has shown that they can have a powerful benefit in some circumstances to treat PTSD, depression, and addiction.
And there are doctors who can, you know, prescribe the microdosing of things that they're convinced can help people. But we're not on the right track. And with all the crime, with all the homelessness, with all of these poor souls that are sleeping in mud on wet evenings here in Seattle, we're not on the right track. And yet They come in with these ideas, and they are so filled with progressive righteousness. And all you have to do is look around this city, and you know that we're on the wrong track. And yet we continue, which I believe is the definition of insanity. All right, quick time out here. Once again, the Vice President of the United States is proving that, you know, as screwed up mentally as Joe Biden is, I'm telling you, if things got handed over to Kamala Harris, even Democrats are deathly afraid of Kamala Harris being in charge. And each day she gives more and more reasons why people should be afraid. So that and lots more as the Dory Monson Show continues. When you pick a running mate as you're running for president, you have to pick somebody who is prepared to take over and run the country if need be. Joe Biden has made a very poor choice. And Joe Biden might be, on his inauguration day, the person least likely to finish out his four-year term just because of what are obvious cognitive problems that he's having. I don't think that anybody is disputing that right now. But the choice of Kamala Harris even has Democrats horribly concerned. You may recall, Kamala Harris wanted to be president. And as she was running in the Democratic primaries, she couldn't even get 1% of support from just Democrats. And the reason is, and I've talked about this before, Jay Inslee couldn't get above 0%. Neither could Kamala Harris, but for very, very different reasons. Jay Inslee, people across the country were just apathetic about him. He didn't register at all with anybody. Total, complete apathy. Kamala Harris, very, very different. People do not like her. The more they heard her talk in interviews and as, you know, she was given all these platforms on CNN, MSNBC, and certainly during the debates. And unlike Jay Inslee, the more people heard Kamala Harris talk, the more they disliked her. And of course, she said that Joe Biden was the biggest racist who was running for president. And yet he picks her anyway, despite the fact that she clearly is not equipped to do the job. And as I said, it is now Democrats and even the far left media that is talking about this. And you know, you may recall, right before Memorial Day, she sent out a tweet, and it was like a shot of her. She just swung her hair, so it was, you know, like a model might do. So her head was off to the side, and she swings her hair, and the caption was, "Enjoy the long weekend." Memorial Day, when we honor the men and women who have given the ultimate sacrifice for this country. And her tweet was, "Enjoy the long weekend." And then you may recall just last week, Kamala gave out on Air Force Two. She walked back for an off-the-record impromptu visit with the press corps, and she gave the media cookies that were bearing her likeness. Somebody had made Kamala Harris looking cookies, and she is passing that out to the press corps, which is very weird. It's a very strange thing. But now let's get to the issue. She was put in charge of the crisis at the border, U.S.-Mexico. Joe Biden said that she is in charge of this. And yesterday, she did an interview with Lester Holt, and he asked her, "You have not been to the border one time, even though you're in charge of this crisis." And she tried to just lie her way through it and said, "Well, we've been to the border." She started talking. Then Lester Holt goes, "No, you have not been." And listen to how Kamala Harris handled this exchange with NBC's Lester Holt.
"Data has shown just..."
No, that's not Kamala. That's Kishama crying out loud.
"Okay. Do you have any plans to visit the border?"
At some point, you know, we are going to the border. We've been to the border. So this whole thing about the border, we've been to the border. We've been to the border.
"You haven't been to the border."
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making.
You don't? Joe Biden has said you're in charge of a humanitarian crisis of children who are stacked up like a cord of firewood in their boxes down there. Joe Biden told them to surge the border. You have little girls who are getting raped. 70%, according to humanitarian groups, 70% of women and little girls who are making the trek across Mexico to try to get to the border are raped on their journey. And you don't understand the question. And then she, "I haven't been to Europe either." She tries to laugh it off. And notice, because I'm going to play it again, she kept saying, "We've been to the border," even though she has not. And it was a really bizarre way to try to lie about this.
"Okay. Do you have any plans to visit the border?"
At some point, you know, We are going to the border. We've been to the border. So this whole thing about the border, we've been to the border. We've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making.
Wow. I mean, that's why people just don't like Lejeune Sandor. Okay, right after we check the news, we get into the Fastest 15. CNN is calling a warning about Kamala Harris now. I will do that and all the other news in the Fast 15 coming up next.